This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Today's guest brings us a perspective you don't often hear about in architecture. Jonathan Walk is a licensed architect, a general contractor, and a real estate broker, a combination that gives him a front row seat to how projects are designed, financed, and ultimately delivered. Jonathan leads an integrated practice that connects architecture, construction, and real estate under one roof. So in this conversation, we'll explore what architect-led design build really looks like in practice, where it creates leverage for small firms, and where architects need to be careful as they step into more complex roles. Jonathan Walk, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Mark, thanks so much for having me and having us on here today. Look forward to sharing what we know and hopefully get others involved. It's maybe the start of a movement.
I'm looking forward to it. This is a conversation that lots of architects are going to want to listen to because I hear it all the time, right? I want to build my own work, right? So many architects have that dream. Some of them do it. Some of them just wish they'll do it. Some of them don't want to do it. And maybe we can talk about why. But before we dive into that conversation and all the things that you're doing, I want to know more about you. Where did you start? When did you discover your passion for architecture, and who or what inspired you to get started?
You know, it all started very young, as probably most of, you know, us and your listeners. You know, we started playing with Lego, and we started, if you remember, girders and panels and Lincoln Logs and all those kind of architectural toys.
Erector set.
Exactly. Erector sets, you know, train sets, all the things, right? And when I was in third grade, we were moving from New York to North Carolina, and my dad was bringing home these plans of the house. Big family, small house, had to figure out where every little piece of furniture went, how we were going to fit in, all the things. And so I got intrigued by these little plans Dad was drawing on graph paper. And that's kind of where it really started, is understanding that and starting to draw things up. Well, when he relocated to North Carolina, one of the first things he was involved in was the redesign and expansion of the museum that he was directing. And so I was getting to see the architectural models, and he would bring home the plans. Well, the plans were on big paper, which just intrigued me. And so I would take 4 sheets of typing paper and tape them together and turn them over and create blueprints. And I would just draw plans and plans and I, you know, all kinds of things. And so that's really where it started. Fast forward, when I was coming up, I was working for an architect while I was in high school, trying to get an understanding of what it truly meant and working on those big sheets of paper and using things like, you know, Leroy's and Letraset and all those things that are from a bygone era, and came across an article about UNC Charlotte, which is where I did my undergrad, and it was titled "Where Architects Build." And I was intrigued by that. And so when I did my undergrad at UNC Charlotte, and while I was in college, my sister was moving to Alaska, bought some land, and I went up there and built my sister's cabin, designed it, built it, literally built it by hand. That's a whole nother crazy story. But that really, for me, was the beginning of design build and understanding what design build meant and understanding what you, you know, the lines you put on paper, how they equate to reality. And so that really stuck with me. And as I learned more and more about design build, that, you know, in a lot of countries, that's the norm. You know, in Asia, architects and contractors are together. In Europe, a lot of it's, you know, the architects and contractors together. And in America, we decided to do it, you know, separately. And it also got me thinking back when you had the Mac and PC. You know, Mac was basically the integration of hardware and software, and PC was, oh, have the software guys over here and the hardware guys here. And Macs always, you know, seemed to work better and were better integrated. And so for me, it's the bringing together and the culmination of the software and the hardware. And every architect's built their house, built their office, right? We've all done these things and we all feel like, you know, we can do them, and we can. There are some nuances to it, and all of a sudden now you're doing it for someone else. And traditionally, we architects were not good at budgetary control or things like that. But what I find is that architect-led design build actually gives you more power and control of the budget and really more knowledge for serving your clients. And so I then left my practice, sold it to my partners, my share to my partners, and I went and I worked for some large general contractors and worked on some big projects and got some sort of under the hood, if you will, experience and kind of, you know, being able to see behind the curtain.
Was that move intentional or was that?
Oh, yeah, very intentional. Yes. Yeah. So we had done a big design build project, a hotel project, which was also a lead project. And we worked hand in hand with the contractors through the whole design process. And they were there. The owner basically brought us as the architects and the contractor together. And we formulated a team and worked hand in hand. You know, we were in their office, they were in our office. It was an awesome experience. And so a little bit after completing that project, they loved it. They really wanted to get more into design build and that process. And I really wanted to get more into the construction side of it. And so it sort of made sense. I wanted to leave the firm and go embed myself into the construction, you know, operation. And so, yeah, it was very intentional because I saw now you could do it on this big scale, right? But one of the things that I learned in sitting at the table in other design build projects is there's this step before us, which is the real estate, right? You're really making those determinations and a lot of things, if we can be there to help them before the acquisition. So whether it's a house or a converting a building or renovating a building or land or whatever the case may be, to be there at the acquisition phase was even more important because then you could at least do a high level approach. So that's then when I got into the real estate portion of it. And so I then left that general contractor, opened up my own practice and added the real estate component to it. And so that's where Wolf 360 really came together as being able to offer the real estate, the architecture and the construction. And that's basically what makes the full circle.
I love it. So full 360 experience. You got all three disciplines in one place. Can you walk us through in a little more detail of Walk 360 and maybe even look at it as a case study, like what type of projects do you do, and sort of describe the full process of what you do from beginning to end?
Yeah. So a little disclaimer here. I can really only speak from North Carolina licensing laws, right? So every state handles it differently.
Good point. Yes.
There are some professional responsibilities, obviously, that also go with that. But really, it comes down to, you know, as an architect and as a real estate agent, you really have a fiduciary responsibility. When you're a contractor, as the name really implies, right? Contracts, you're essentially an arm's length. And that's one of the key issues with offering all these three services. And then also in how you've got to set it, like in North Carolina, even though we're sort of under one umbrella, if you will, or, you know, you're really three separate entities, three separate companies.
Are you set up that way with three separate companies?
Yeah, yes. But we are set up that way, but you have to be set up that way in order to function properly.
Yeah. But in terms of marketing, you market Walk 360. So
yeah. And so absolutely. That's the thing is, you know, we really handle the whole process from, you know, start to finish. And we partner with lots of real estate agents and work with them, you know, hand in hand at the front end. And yeah. We also do just architecture work, and we also do just construction work. So there's times where we just do one or two pieces of the pie, but, you know, we prefer to be involved in all three, even if we're not executing all three, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah.
And somebody asked me one time, they said, so when you're touring the site or you're visiting your project site, you know, are you there as a real estate agent, an architect, contractor?
Right. What hat do you have on?
And, you know, I thought it was a great question. I thought about it and I was like, well, you know, I am who I am. And so I'm really there as all three. Like I can't subdivide my head that way, but you're getting the benefit of the eyes of the architect, the real estate agent, and the contractor, right? So if we're looking at, let's just say a simple home project and it's a bathroom addition, right? I can look at it as a real estate agent and ROI, right? What's your return on investment by adding a master bathroom? Then I can look at it as the architect in terms of the design, you know, setbacks, impervious area design, all those sorts of things. And then look at it as the contractor, what is the cost, right? And viability and logistical issues to do that, right? So you're really getting the benefit of that mindset. But throughout the day, this morning being a perfect example, I had a call with a client about looking for some office space for them. Then I did some design work on a new home that we're doing and worked on the design for that a little bit. And then I put together a budget on a renovation that we're doing. So, you know, you do have to sort of compartmentalize your time to do that specific work, but you are always kind of in that mindset of all of it. And then, of course, there's, you know, marketing and operations and billing and, you know, all the back of the house stuff that we all love so much. So it really is about bringing all of that stuff together. For me personally, I find that it, by me being all three roles, I've got a team, I've got a design team, I've got a construction team, I've got a, you know, real estate team. But for me to have all that capability as opposed to with a partner. And I'm sure, you know, people have asked me about sort of like, how do you franchise this or how do you scale this to beyond, you know, you and other areas? And you could do it if you had a real estate broker that had a real, you know, design sensibility. You had a contractor with a design sensibility and an architect with a building sensibility to where the three of you could create this together. But I think that's hard to find, quite frankly. And so honestly, I'm not one of those people that love to have, you know, all these diplomas and certificates on your wall kind of thing, but you kind of wind up with that. But it is the know-how and it is that information that really does suit your clients. And what I say to my clients is the sooner we're there, the more impact that we have. And so if we're there looking at the land for your project, we can do a 40,000 high, you know, overview and what are going to be the issues, what are the design, where's the sun come up, where's the sunset, access, you know, all those, you know, topography, utilities, all those sort of things. And then you can get into the design of it, and then you can understand, okay, what are the costs and logistics of it at a very high level before the acquisition is made. And then you start to dive into the details of each piece as you go down.
Do your clients typically find you as this integrated firm looking for that, or do they find you in one of them and then you introduce and teach them what they need to know about Walt Reason?
I would say they typically find us in one of them. What I find very interesting, so the real estate is kind of the oddball piece, right? I think there's a lot of architects and contractors doing design build. There's not a lot of that are, have the real estate component where they're doing the real estate as a service to their clientele, right? There's a lot of developers and stuff, but really doing it as a service, I think, is minimal. And then most homeowners, you know, when you're talking about smaller projects, but even some smaller commercial projects, really think of kind of like we were talking about at the beginning, the European or Asian model, where they really think that you are also the builder, or you're the builder, but you are also the designer. Like when you explain to them that, you know, and there's also a big difference between an architect and a designer. And so as they start to understand those differences, they're kind of surprised, like, oh, I always figured it was all done under one roof, you know? And so that's kind of the nuance. And then really, again, to the general public, sort of really explain the difference between an architect and a designer, and that, you know, we're not just creating CAD drawings or blueprints, if you will. We're doing real design. We're looking at not just code issues, but, you know, buildability issues, daylighting, integrating technology, what we do. And that's where they kind of like, oh, okay. Because what I found is a lot of design builders, and why we've really taken the time to differentiate that we're architect-led design build, is that a lot of design build companies, they just go out and hire, you know, a drafting firm. A lot of times the client doesn't even ever meet with the designer, right? Or they just pick out a floor plan. Oh, we like floor plan 427B. And we want this interior finish package, which is great and is fine for certain people and certain projects. But what we do is we do custom work. We do, you know, if you want an office building, this is the office building. If you want the house or a house renovation, this is what we're offering. And it's a higher level of thought and service than, you know, somebody just drawing up some plans of, you know, what you want.
So three separate companies, one brand. You mentioned that each company has a separate team. Can you talk about those teams and how they are integrated?
Yeah, so we like to say that, you know, we get ink on our hands and we get mud on our boots, right? So
I love it.
We really like to get out in the field. I was just out in the field doing some work this morning, which is always kind of nice and refreshing. You know, again, I think it sort of draws that type of architect, if you will. You know, there's a lot of integration. You know, we have our, not just our PM&E engineers, but our PM&E trades at the table with us while we're doing design, right? We want their input. We want their feedback, you know, whether it's we're working on a large house right now and we were talking about routing ductwork. And originally we were looking at like TJIs and some LVLs and things like that. And it was like, well, you know, if we just change these to trusses, it makes running this ductwork a hell of a lot easier, you know? And it's like, well, the trusses don't impact the design, if you will. So let's go to trusses, and it simplifies, you know, ductwork. Well, we wouldn't have figured that out until we were in the field or till we were bidding, right, in a traditional sense. Well, this way, you know, the mechanical contractor is right there with us, and he's the one that was like, threw that idea out. And it's like, oh, yeah, well, okay, let's do that. So it's that kind of integration. It's having those people around the table regularly. We work with our crews pretty regularly, you know, the mechanical crew we've been working with for years. They understand us. They know what we're looking at. In a house we just finished, he wanted to put a giant return in this big living room vaulted ceiling, and we have this 24-inch square return. And he looked at it, he's like, yeah, I can see you're not going to want to do that. And I'm like, you know,
that's not going to happen.
In certain cases, we could do it and it could be really cool, right? But, you know, just slapping this, you know, grill in that location, that ain't going to work. But he like understands us now, right? So like, that's the thing that I find so exciting about working with these crews and working with them over, is they understand you. They know that what they're doing This isn't a tract home. This isn't, you know, a run-of-the-mill building. Or there's areas that are important, right? Like if this was in the hallway, who cares, right? Okay, yeah, we could live with it. And that's basically what we did. We moved it to a hallway. Fine. But in the main space with the corn windows and the, you know, all that, no, hell no, you know? So, but they understand that now, right? Now they come back and they're more, you know, one understanding, and it's not, oh, this crazy architect, when they come back and see, and then we get them to come back and see, right? A lot of these crews, they do their thing and they're gone, right? No, we bring them back to see, and so that they understand why it was important, why these mitered corners made a difference, why when they were laying up the foundation, it was imperative they did the, you know, those kinds of things. So then they come back and they go, oh, okay, I get it. Because so many of these guys, they come in, they do it, they do their thing, they're off the next day doing the next thing, then the next thing, the next thing. They never come back and see the finished work, which is kind of, you know, the world that we live in, right? And so having them understand that, having the crews understand that, and getting the input, like so many times they'll say, hey, I can do this a different way. You know, we might have it detailed a certain way on the drawing. And he says, look, I can do this a way more efficient way, a better way, da da da. And I'll be like, okay, well, but what does it look like? What's the outcome? And he's like, it looks exactly the same or better, right? It's going to be a lot cleaner, a lot tighter, whatever the case may be. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's great. You know, and he's like, but you know, for me, it's going to save me a day. Okay, let's do it. There's no cost impact. There's no quality impact. There's no time impact, except as a benefit. And so that kind of feedback would you never get just sitting at the drawing board. And then for the designers to be hearing that and interacting with that, the people that are drawing that up, now then they also have learned for the next time they draw up that detail, okay, next time I draw up that detail, I'm going to draw it that way instead of this way because that's the way they're going to do it or the way they want to do it, right? So it's a lot of that going back and forth detail that you just don't get in traditional methods, or they're all handled through some horrible RFI process or something like that, right? So this is really the teams working together and integrating for the owner's benefit.
So are all the teams, all three teams under one roof?
Basically, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, your subcontractors, you know, they're out in the world, you know, doing their thing. The project managers and superintendents are there, but and then the designers are there and, you know, and then obviously the subs and the real estate people, they're always out tooling around. But yes, we try to get everybody gathered together occasionally and especially during parts of a project, key milestones, obviously the end of the project, the beginning of the project. Yeah, we try to get everybody together, you know, a few times at the very least. And then whenever something comes up, right, there's always a head scratching moment where you're figuring things out or opportunities that present themselves in the field that you didn't quite see and when you're designing. So we were doing a house that had this, you know, beautiful view, this vista, and we had this window, a big window. And it's like, man, if we just made that window just a little bit bigger, you'd get like that money shot, you know, you'd get that complete sunset or, you know, whatever, you know, you'd get view of that farmhouse. And those are the things that no matter how careful you are doing it on paper and modeling and everything, you know, when until you're there and then you can address it, right? So while we were in the middle of framing, we were like, oh man, look at that. And if you're, you know, and sure enough, we were able to make that adjustment. We adjusted the windows a little bit. So it's that kind of sort of immediate feedback during the construction that really is great for all of us, and in particular, you know, our clients.
Yeah, when you have all of your team with aligned goals, right? Everybody's working for the same reason, for the same purpose, for the same client. You have better projects and happier clients.
And the clients get excited about it too, right? They see the value in it, right? And if you catch that, I always tell my clients, like, it's always easier to change, to move a wall or move something on paper, right? An eraser is a hell of a lot cheaper than once the wall is framed up. And but that's the cool thing is when you're in the process, it can be equally as inexpensive, right? It's like, okay, we're framing this window out. And as we're framing the window out, we notice that, okay, well, if we just frame this window out 1 foot more, and we increased the size of that window. We haven't ordered the window yet. We increased that size of the window for pennies. It makes a difference. And the owners, you know, they love that. They love that, you know, part of the decision making. You know, oh yeah, you're talking about $100. Yeah, let's do it. That kind of thing.
So one integrated brand, I'm assuming that the customer experience is also one integrated experience for the client. Is that true?
Yes. So I jokingly tell people when we first meet, you know, if you like me, if you love me, we're going to have a great, great project. And similarly, if I like and love you, we're going to have a great project. But you're working with me, you know, and so if you don't like me or I don't like you,
right,
one of the problems, they say, well, who else does what you do? And not many. So,
right.
And then we also talk about, you know, there, because we're together for so long, right? Let's say we're starting at the real, we're starting by looking at houses or looking at property or whatever the case may be. We have, you know, 1-2 year relationship. And that's why so many of our clients become friends. I play pickleball with one of my clients who I didn't know at all before we started working with them. And, you know, now we're in a pickleball league together, whatever. So we're going to know, because we're so involved. So on the real estate side, you're very involved in their financials and personal, right? Why do you want this area or location, or, you know, what's it serving you? Why do you, what do you like it? And how much can you afford? That's a big, big issue. Because then we're going to find something, we're going to design it or renovate it or do an addition to it or tear it down, or we're building from scratch. So, you know, what is your budget? We got to understand that on day one. So we're going to be very personal with them and their finances. And then, as I was explaining to one client, we were designing their house and their master shower just kept getting bigger, bigger. And it was like, you know, we're starting to mess up some of these proportions. And like, this shower is getting really big for like, as a percentage of the house. And so we were sitting down and I said, okay, remember at the beginning, I told you, like, we're going to get really personal because, you know, it's financials and it's personal stuff. And he's like, yep, yep. They were, you know, a couple, and they're like, yeah. And I said, okay, this shower, like, we've redesigned it 3-4 times. We've got budget, you know, constraints. We've got space constraints, but let's dig down into what this shower is all about. Like, do you guys both leave the house exactly at 8 a.m. and it's an efficiency thing? You need your shower head. She needs her shower head. You guys are getting ready. Boom, you're out of the house. You know, so it's efficiency. Or are we having fun in the shower? Is this our Friday, Saturday night fun time? And, you know, we want a shower we can move around and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, so, you know, and so the, you know, their faces turn red. They chuckle. They're like, well, yeah, we like to have some fun in the shower. And I'm like, okay, great. And he's laughing. He goes, man, when you said you're going to get personal, you really going to get personal. He's like, yeah, but now you're going to actually get the shower.
It matters.
You want, right? Like, you're spending a lot of money here. You know, let's make sure we get you as much as what you want for the money that you're spending. It's the more we know, the better we know. And so it's so true. Like, you know, you're in deep with people's finances. You're in deep with their lifestyle, you know, whether it's a kitchen and they want to have a chef's kitchen because they love to cook. They love to throw big parties. They have to have a movie theater room because they love, you know, their movie aficionados, whatever, you know, understanding those things and why they're important. And then that just doesn't end up on the paper, right? Now we understand that when we're going into construction, our construction team understands that. As we start to go through some things and they say, oh, you know, well, we could save you some money here. We could do, you know, something here and say, no, 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 we're not. That's not an area to save money because that's their primo area. That's where they want to spend the money. Now, you know, the second, third bedroom, they're not so interested in. Yeah, let's do some of those money saving ideas in there and let's use it there, but not in this part of the house. Right. And, or, you know, we're doing an office building, right? And they really want this really nice lobby experience, you know, for, they really want to open up for, you know, clients coming in. And they really want that to be the face they put forward. And then the conference room and the break area kind of all integrates. And that's what's really important. But then all the office space, they're like, most of our people are out in the field. Like, they just need a desk to come in, check in, do a team meeting, get their equipment, and they're out. We don't see them again till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We don't care about the office area. We care about when our clients are coming in and what they're seeing. And so all the money is going into the lobby and the clear story and the wall feature and all that, right? But the office space is low priority. It's necessary, but it's, you know, low priority. So it's really with each client, it's understanding those things that are so important. And a lot of us as architects do that, right? We all try to do that. But when you've got that understanding into the construction, all those decisions that are then being made in the field are also understanding that as well. And that's the kind of thing, at least I've never figured out, how you put that on paper, or, you know, how you put that into a 3D model, or, you know, whatever the case may be, however you're choosing to deliver. I don't know how you put that kind of information in. And that's the part that I feel is that's the real value of architect-led design build, is that you're bringing all of that sort of, you know, institutional knowledge, if you will, into the construction phase.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by WeCollabify, one of our trusted allied partners. As this community has grown over the years, one thing has become very clear to me. The partners we choose matter. Allied partners are not sponsors. They're not advertisers. They are organizations that we've taken the time to get to know, to work alongside, and to trust. They understand the real pressures of practice and the responsibility that comes with leading a small firm. WeCollabify earned that trust by helping small firm owners address a challenge that sits at the center of long-term firm health: building capacity in a way that supports people, not just projects. Their insourcing model brings skilled design, BIM, and technical professionals directly into your team. They work in your time zone, inside your systems, and part of your day-to-day workflow. That integration allows firms to add capacity when it's needed, scale with intention, and grow without sacrificing culture, leadership focus, or quality of life. If you're thinking beyond short-term fixes and focused on building a firm that lasts, I encourage you, go learn why WeCollabify is one of our trusted allied partners. Visit WeCollabify.com/EntreeArchitect to learn more. That's WeCollabify.com/EntreeArchitect. Gain lessons learned and credits earned with Arcademy, ARCAT's continuing education program. Listen to popular episodes of the Detailed podcast and earn AIA-approved HSW credits. Yes, you heard that right, HSW credits for episodes of Detailed podcast. Listen to an episode, check out the learning objectives, and use what you've learned while listening to take the course. The program is free, it's simple, and can be found at arcat.com under the resources tab, or just go to arcat.com/arcademy. That's arcat.com/arcademy. That's arcat.com/arcademy. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. Thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. Under one roof, one brand, three separate companies, so there are three separate businesses. How does construction and contract management, contract administration work in terms of billing and keeping all the finances among the three companies?
Yeah. So effectively what we've done is sort of taking the kind of the old AIA contract and the DBIA contract, which is kind of like a two phase, which kind of with ours sort of winds up being like sort of a three phase. So the real estate kind of lives kind of out here. So yeah, real estate's got its own paperwork and everything. When we start design, we do the architectural firm has a kind of a schematic design contract. You know,
okay,
whether it's sort of due diligence, concept design, whatever, that's kind of the part one. And what we call internally, we call sort of the schematic design package. So plans, elevations, you know, architectural site plan, maybe some primary issues. Then we'll sort of hand that over to the construction group and say, okay, put some numbers together based on this, you know, maybe a little narrative or conversation that says, okay, here's those things. We were just talking about put some numbers together. So then the construction group basically does a schematic design pricing. Now you've got the schematic design package, sit down with the client, review that. It's never what the client wants. It's always over budget.
Right.
You know, that part doesn't change no matter how you do it, especially these days. And so we sort of tweaked that. You know, they wanted the wolf stove and, well, maybe you don't get, you know, maybe that's not as imperative to have the wolf stove or the Sub-Zero fridge or something. We do, you know, more of a upgraded kitchen appliance package or something like that. You know, whatever the tweak, maybe you wanted some super nice lighting or technology and solar. You know, we just did one, an exercise where they really wanted to go solar. You know, the solar credits are gone by the time we do this. So it didn't really make sense, but we, instead of spending the money on the solar, we prepped the house for solar. So we've got everything set up. So when it makes sense to do it, that they can come in and easily tie in. So there was the money to spend for the solar prepping, but not necessarily the solar, you know, panels and full technology integration, if you will. So it's a lot of that kind of going back and forth that might be tweaking some square footage or something like that in the design, tweak that, get a good schematic design that aligns with a good budget, schematic design budget, which again, sort of high level, lots of contingency. They say yes, then they go on to a contract for construction documents. So then they say, okay, this is good. They've got a construction documents contract.
So is that contract between the owner and the architect?
Owner and the architect. Absolutely. Yeah. And the architectural firm.
And then is the construction a separate contract or does the construction company work for the architecture company?
Yes. Yeah. So construction is a completely separate contract. So then you have a construction contract that says based on this schematic design package and based on this schematic design budget,
got it.
This is what we're going to build for you. We're going to true up the budget once we get the CDs. But we're going to be there along the way because we're now you start getting into finished selection and things like that, which is, again, a little bit of a hybrid of between the designers and the builders, you know, the subs. But you basically then bring that forward as well. So you wind up with construction documents submitted for permits. Those then become the basis for the to be built, you know, construction contract. But so, yes, you have an architectural contract that is essentially got a part one and a part two. So schematic design and CDs, and then you have a construction contract that is based on the schematic design pricing, but then is finalized with the construction documents pricing.
Got it. Got it. So two different contracts that incrementally go along through the process simultaneously. They're working together.
Yeah.
So the client is getting two separate contracts, but still the project is managed by one person, one team.
Correct.
So from their point of view, they're writing two separate checks, but the experience is one experience.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's a big part of what we explain at the beginning to them so that they understand.
Yeah.
Yes. It's all, you know, again, they all think, oh, okay, I'm going to come to Wolf 360. I'm going to write Wolf 360 one check. Boom, I'm done. And it's like, no, I'd love it to work that way. We've got a long way to go to get it to work that way kind of legally, but it works fine. It's just them understanding.
Yeah.
You know, we've looked at, you know, the sort of the design build model is you hire the contractor. I'm going to build you this for $1 million. I'm going to hire the designer and I control that, right?
Right.
I don't like that method. I don't like it in the field and I don't like it operationally because what you're doing, I feel like in my experience, you're putting an arbitrary number with minimal scope.
Right.
And really all you're doing is creating a square foot estimate. So, okay, you want X for $1 million. I'm going to deliver you X for $1 million. And in my experience, both from not as my company, but my experience in working for other contractors and stuff, the owner is really just sacrificing kind of everything to get there.
Right. And then it's change order city from there on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know like as you get into bigger projects, you know, you've got all other kinds of, you know, delivery, you know, methods. And I just, to me, and the scale of, you know, the projects we do, you know, a big project for us is $3 million, right? We're not doing, you know, $10 million hospital additions or freestanding off, you know, multi-story office buildings. You know, we're building small office buildings, church additions, small churches, houses, office fit ups, restaurant fit up. You know, we're doing projects of that scale. And then on the design side, we design hotels and things like that on the design side, but we're not necessarily building them. Although a lot of times we'll bring our construction expertise to the table as sort of project management or something like that. But because every project's different, you know, and where there's a will, there's a way. And if people want our input, whatever, we're happy to provide it. But ultimately, for us, as architect-led design build, this is the methodology and process that we feel really delivers the best for the client and really serves them in a way that I think is very open, is very transparent, and isn't spent sacrificing everything they wanted to get something, you know, basic.
Yeah, I think there's also a much higher perceived value when you do it that way, right? When there's two contracts, there's two services, they understand that there are two complete services. One's an architectural service, one's a construction service. They're paying for them both. It's managed all by one team and one crew, but it's two separate things. The architecture service now is worth a lot more than it would be the other way around, where they're buying a building, right? And they're going to get a construction contract. And oh, by the way, we'll also design it for you. Essentially, that's perceived as free design because they're paying for this building. Whereas the other way, they're paying for both. It's a much higher perceived value on both sides.
And I feel too, for us, it's a lot more cost surety. When you're signing our construction contract to move forward, there is surety in there. Now, there's always surprises. You know, we never get the dart on the bullseye. You know, it's always off by a little bit. But that's also why we, from the very beginning, especially starting in that schematic design, we're putting in contingency. Now, the contingency starts to taper off as you get, you still have contingency. And, you know, best case scenario, you don't use any of it. Worst case scenario, you use all of it. But really, the reality of it is you wind up using some of it. And what that does is that alleviates for your owner the anxiety, because we're all already anxious, right? The architect, the contractor, the owner, we're all anxious when there's a surprise, right? Regardless of, you know, what it is. An inspector saying, oh no, you need to do this because I say so, or you dig a hole in the ground and, you know, there's rock, or what's there is not there. What the contingency does is it takes that anxiety out from everybody on the money side of it, right? So you still have the anxiety and, okay, we've got to address this and let's get into this and figure it out. But at least you're not sitting there going, oh shit, how am I going to pay for this thing, right? Because that's the worst part, right? Now, for the owner's perspective, like, especially when it's an unforeseen condition or something the inspector says, they're like, well, hell, I didn't have anything to do with this, you know? But if you've got the contingency there, at least they know. And then the best case scenario is at the end of the day, there's always some money left. Okay, well, let's, you know, if you want to use that money, use it for something that you want to, you know, or let's, okay, you talked about wanting to put in this, you know, fire pit or pool. And hey, we've got this money that, you know, we're near the end of the job that's safely sitting there, you know, either put it back in your account or do you want to put it into something else? So that's the nice thing is it takes that. And then also too, by being the integrated team, the best part, nobody's pointing fingers.
Exactly.
Oh, you should have known this, you know. Right. Oh, it's unforeseen condition, BS. You know, how many of these buildings have you renovated? You know, there's going to be pipes in the wall, you know, or whatever the case may be, or the contractor going, oh, well, that's a $10,000 change order. And the architect going, oh, that should be $5,000. You know, you're overcharging. You know, all those things are gone.
Right.
And the people that understand it the most and appreciate that the most are the ones that have been through it in a traditional method before.
Right.
They're like, yeah, oh my God. And then the owner winds up having to be a mediator in a situation that they're not even qualified to do. You know, I had a client the other day, we're doing this huge renovation for their service business. And she's saying to me that she's like, you know, I've got this great painter, and I don't need to pay you your upcharge for the painter. Let me just get my painter. I'll just pay them out of your contract, you know, directly. And I said, look, I said, I get it. I said, I totally hear where you're coming from. I come from that background too. You know, it's like, oh, why do I have to pay you to do this when I can do it? Right. And I said, but listen, that painter is going to have to come back 3 or 4 times. Then that means you're coordinating when that painter comes back. And then that painter's not going to show up when he's got to show up. And da, 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 da. And I said, you know, she's in sales. And I said, you know, what would be a better use of your time is you go out, you sell 5 or 6 more of those things that you sell, make that money, and that'll be your time used on like a 10x return on your time as opposed to you spending time managing the painter.
Right.
And I said, and what you're going to pay me to manage that painter.
And she did the math.
She like was like, well, damn, that's a good point. And I'm like, yeah, don't get sucked into that because next thing you know, you're going to have 30, 40 hours in managing a damn painter that's not showing up for no fault of his own or anybody's. And you get sucked down that rabbit hole. That's a waste of your time. Go make your money doing what you do, what you're an expert at, what's made you the money to afford to be able to do this project and keep doing that and do more of it so we can do more of these, right?
Did you along the way make any mistakes? There are people listening right now thinking, oh, this is a great idea. This is something I'd really love to try. What are some of the mistakes you made that they should be looking at?
Oh my God. So, you know, my life is a bunch of mistakes, but my friend, we were talking about the fountainhead. And when I was getting into construction, he said, well, you know, the first thing you got to do is throw that damn book away, you know? So there's this part of that that's true. You still want to look at it and still execute with a design eye, with design being important, but you have to step out of it for that passion and bullheadedness. Now, there's times when it's appropriate, but you've got to sort of step back from it and look at it as a builder, right? And understand it as a builder. And then you can come back to that. And that's where really for us, we've honed in on is really understand everything's not important. We've all been to these Frank Lloyd Wright houses where every freaking square inch is freaking thought about and you just want to tell them to F off. And it's just like incredible. It's an amazing. We don't do those kind of projects as much as I'd love to. So every square inch doesn't matter. And so you have to figure out what square inches matter. What square footages matter? Where's the impact? And then you start to drive from there. I think that's the biggest lesson learned. A project that actually was one that I did for myself, a renovation. My wife kept telling me, why are you so adamant about this here and that here? And at the end of the day, the ROI wasn't there. And we wound up making only a little bit of money. And yeah, okay, this thing looks great, but the people that are using it, buying it, you know, at the end of the day, they're not appreciating what you did. And there is a battle, right? There's the artistic battle, understanding that. But that also too is where when you're doing this for a client, understanding you've got a fiduciary responsibility to your client. And when you're building it as an arm's length contract. So you got to balance those differences in what's your duty to your client. And again, most of us architects, we've all built our house. We've all built our office. We've all done, you know, little projects for ourselves. And, you know, maybe at the end of the day, if you're a little bit over budget or you bust the budget or whatever, it doesn't matter because it's for me and I'm going to, you know, whatever. But when you're doing it for a client, it's very, very different. And you've really got to be sharing with them. And is this important to them? Do they want to spend the money on it? And don't lose your shirt because you want to make this thing an art piece. And okay, and I'm going to build it and I'm going to build it. And at the end of the day, if I break even, you know, it's okay. No, you've got to run each of these as a business. You know, yes, it's an art, but it's a business. And you do that too many times, you break even or lose money because you're doing it for the art, you're not going to make it. And that's a hard lesson to learn because we all want to be artists. And you still are, and you can still do the art, but you've also got to be responsible about the execution of it. And then within that, the other problematic part is notoriously architects are not good with paperwork and construction is all about paperwork. You are a contractor. You handle contracts, scopes and clearly defining those scopes with your sub. So you might put in there, you're going to install a toilet, and installing a toilet means one thing to you, means another thing to them. And you get there and A, it may not be the toilet that you wanted or thought you had specified. You might have had it on the drawings as a Kohler, blah, blah, blah. But in your contract with them, they didn't specify that it was going to be your Kohler, blah, blah, blah. And they put in whatever they wanted to put in. And or, this has happened before, there is no toilet because they priced it based on you supplying the toilet.
Yeah.
Well, wait, it says install the toilet. Yeah, install the toilet that you provide. So managing those contracts and managing the words and clarity in those contracts is key. And as an architect, you know, we're like, oh yeah, put in a toilet and it's going to be this toilet and that. Well, you know, there's $1,000 toilets and there's $200 toilets. And if you're thinking that you're buying the $1,000 toilet and your plumber's number is $4,000 and you think that includes a $1,000 toilet, yeah, you're going to be disappointed. And those are just things that you learn. You know, those are the hard lessons that you learn. And, it, you know, you take that to the electrician, you take that to the framer, you take that to every trade, you know, the roofer, you know, everything. And so that's the old adage, the devil's in the details. It's not just in the details on the drawings, it's in the details in your contracts.
Yeah, very wise advice for anybody who's considering architect-led design builds. Thank you for sharing those items. As we wrap up here, we have thousands of architects listening. Lots of them are small business owners. You are business owner times three. What is one thing a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I truly believe that construction is a great vehicle for small design firms, if that is your aptitude, right? There are architects that really understand construction, and there's architects that are artists. And I think to go that route is, I think the more that we do it, the more that it becomes commonplace. It is growing in popularity. I think the more it becomes the norm, then we start to get some legislation, so to speak, behind us that supports that role and strengthens our position, right? But I think the best advice, if you want to just stay architect, is still understanding construction. You know, really, how do these things go together? What does it entail? What trades does it entail, right? So there's like a corner detail that might involve three or four different trades, but you're drawing it. If you're just drawing lines and not thinking about the constructability of it, you're not doing a good service as an architect. And so I think a lot of architects like to just draw pretty pictures. I think that's kind of where we get in trouble. And understanding how things go together is key. I have one quick story. I was working on a big project in Minneapolis and with this Starchitect, and we had these narrow slot windows. You know, they were like 6 inches wide and like 100 feet tall, right? I mean, just huge all over the building. And they were awesome. And it was computer modeled that way and rendered that way and looked cool. Well, as we were putting together the CDs and working through the details of that, the project architect, this was when I was young, project architect is like, okay, he took like a shoebox and a couple of things, books and stuff. And he said, so you're the drywall and you're trying to finish out that interior. It's about 18 inches deep, narrow slot window. Show me how he took these books and some stuff together.
All right.
Show me how you're going to finish those corners out.
Yeah.
How are you going to get a tool in there? How are you going to screw that drywall in? How are you going to get in there with a paintbrush or a paint roll? And he's like, it doesn't work. You can't do it. You can make it look as beautiful as you want. He said, but in the way that it's articulated, it cannot happen. So it's that level of understanding. How are you going to get that thing there? You know, one of my favorite books as a kid was Mike Mulligan and Marianne, and he digs the hole so deep and can't get out. You know, logistics and understanding how things go together is, I think, unfortunately, a part of architecture that is getting lost in the production side of, you know, construction documents. But the more you know and the more you think through some of that stuff, really the better the design is and the execution of it. So understanding, you know, an architect that was working for me, and she would not come out to the job site. She was, oh yeah, no, I don't need to come out there. I don't need, you know, I said, you know what? I said, you are going to have to go build some habitat homes. It is a requirement. You've got to go out there and you've got to understand how damn heavy that roof truss is, or putting that stud wall up, or how heavy an LVL is. Because until you understand that and understand what that means, you can't draw it correctly and understanding what you're drawing. Otherwise, you're just drawing lines. And I think for us, that's the real challenge. And the better you do that, the better your business is going to be.
His name is Jonathan Walk. W-O-L-K, Walk 360 is the firm. Walk 360 on social media everywhere and the website, walk360.com. You can go learn more about Jonathan and the work that he's doing. Go check it out. Jonathan, thank you. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, thank you.
I love the construction side of architecture. Being an architect, spent many hours in the field before becoming an architect for many of the reasons you just described. I love what you're doing. I love that you have these three disciplines as one. I love the branding and how you're marketing it. So keep doing it. Thank you for the inspiration. And thanks for coming by here and sharing your story at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a link with a friend, because that's how we've continued to grow and serve thousands more small firm architects just like you. Thank you to our sponsors for this episode. Links to the sponsors and all the resources we discussed today, they are all available in the show notes for this episode at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Entree Architect is a proud member of the Gable Media Network. It's the multimedia network moving the architecture, engineering, and construction industries forward through the power of storytelling. You can earn AIA continuing education credits by listening to select episodes of this podcast and many others at gablemedia.com/members. And if you are a small firm architect, listen up. Join us today at Entree Architect Network. It's the worldwide community for entrepreneur architects. We've been around since 2012, and our basic level is now free to join. Yes, you can join Entree Architect Network for free. And that gives you access to valuable business resources and our global community of architects. And you can upgrade anytime for live coaching, AIA approved training, and mastermind support. So visit entrearchitect.com to learn more and to get started. My name is Mark R. LePage. Thank you for listening to the Entree Architect Podcast. Love, learn, share. Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.
Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.